I just in the cupboard, and there's some yeast in there that's best before end 2016.
What? That's Pete. We're having a baby next week, so he's doing a bit of a tidy up.
Right, I've just thrown it away.
You've thrown it away?
Yeah.
What are we going to have for dinner?
I don't know. Fish and chips?
I'm Kelly Ford. Welcome to Pod of Mum. I lost my mum to cancer age 15. Pete and I have a daughter, Tabitha. I've written a lot about parenting over the years on my blog and Instagram, but I've always wanted to talk to other mums, mumming it without their mum or mummy or mother. All the women out there handling packed lunches, broken sleep, homeschooling, screen time, and grief. So in this series, I'm doing just that. This week, I'm talking to stylist and presenter Grace Woodward, mum to Larkin, about her mum, Marion.
She was born Marion Carter and then married my dad in a kind of secret ceremony. So she became Marion Woodward. And then my stepdad wouldn't marry her. And so she changed her name by deed poll to Marion Heathcote, which has kind of always been a bit sad for me. But so I guess she's just Marion and mummy to me.
And Heathcote, was that your stepfather's second?
That's right, yeah.
Wow, so she just secretly did that?
I don't know if there was a discussion, but I know that she always really wanted to have, after having a sort of secret wedding with my dad that nobody was invited to when they were very, very young. And she was 23 when she had me, so I think she was sort of 17 or 18 when she got married, which is kind of inconceivable to me. But so I think she really wanted a proper wedding at some point, and my stepdad refused to give it to her. But after she had two more children after me with him, she changed by deed poll, and I don't really know the ins and outs of that, but I didn't end well, I'm going to tell you that.
Now, when you were growing up, what did you call her? What was her name to you?
Mummy. Always mummy.
Mummy.
Or mama. Yeah. Mama or mummy.
Mummy. And was that the name you called her until her last days?
Oh, no. You know what? It's been really hard writing about her because you get into mother, because I feel like sort of journalistically you can't write mummy, so it sounds a bit childish, and so you end up and mum I really, really have an aversion to, I think because she did, or she was a massive snob as well, but I have an aversion to mum. I don't want my son to call me mum, and so writing about her has always become mother. And then it feels a bit like dramatic.
And draconian, yeah.
Yeah, so I've never been really comfortable about where I go with that. I still haven't kind of nailed that one, to be honest.
I mean, I'm 40. I always refer to my mummy as mummy. It will never change. It takes me to an 8-year-old self, but it is just what I do. Now, Grace, we're going to go back to the beginning. I just wondered, could you tell me a little bit about what your childhood was like?
So my parents divorced when I was 18 months. When my mum and I moved out of London, we lived initially via the council. The council homed us in a mobile home, which I like to think about as the trailer trash years. And then they gave us a proper council flat because you could do that back then. And it was, she made it super beautiful and full of like designers guild fabrics. You know, that was a big thing back in the 80s. But you know, it was fairly volatile. My mum and dad they were both addicts and they used to just argue and scream. And my dad didn't used to turn up for, you know, my, the appointed weekends and stuff like that. My mum met my stepdad when I was 4, and then we moved in and out of his house until I was 10. So it was fairly unstable until my mum got pregnant with my brother when I was 10, and they decided they would make a go of it, you know, try to sort of make a sort of functional family out of some sort of dysfunction. But I mean, how would I surmise my childhood? Unstable is what I would call it.
And was there kind of a codependency there? Were you kind of her plus one that she really needed amongst all that turmoil?
Oh, yeah, very much so. I was a tiny adult to her. I didn't really have a childhood because I was made to adult so young. But, you know, at the time I adored it. You know, to me, she was everything. And so it became a bit more difficult when she was sort of outdating or not there. And, you know, it's that thing that she sort of made me into her tiny best friend. And I remember she used to, like, make me answer phone calls in our tiny flat when I was, like, 4 or 5. And being like, oh, mommy's not here at the moment. And it's like, I think about it now and it was madness. But she was still amazing in a way.
And when she did parent you, how did she do that? Because there was obviously still a duty of care there. So when she did have to kind of take on the role as parent, how did she do that?
I think, yeah, my mum really liked all of us as babies or as toddlers. She loved the unconditional love of a small child. But when she had to, because I think she was sort of traumatized herself as a child. Her father died when she was in the womb. And I sort of think that she didn't ever really grow up. And so when we were all kind of like her mental age, that we could sort of knock about or just be like puppies in a basket, then that was fine. But when it became a bit more challenging, she couldn't cope. So I'm not really sure what her parenting style was. I don't really think she had a parenting style. I mean, she loved to the end of the earth, you know. But it was, I feel that it was slightly self-reflective and slightly selfish. It was that adoration that she liked from having children.
And you mentioned that she had a substance abuse problem. And can you touch upon that for us?
Well, it wasn't really substance. What it was is I feel that undiagnosed, potentially, she had mental health issues. She had an eating disorder which set in at 15, and then she had it all her life. And that was a kind of mix between bulimia and anorexia. You know, and then I think that because possibly that she was bipolar, that she self-medicated with sort of alcohol and then dabbled in prescription drugs, but was so thin that if she took anything, I remember just before my GCSE, she'd taken some Valium that had given her and it like whacked her out and I had to carry her to bed. I was at home revising and I was just like completely freaked out.
Grace, to interrupt you there, but I just thought, God, I just have that image of you revising for your GCSEs and actually you're taking on the role of mother at that point where you're making sure that she's in a safe bed, you know, and she's not just passed out on the sofa. Do you feel like you took on that role quite way before you actually became a mum?
Oh, but I think I took it on at like, God knows, 3, younger, you know. Yeah, I was always having to look out for her. It was a sort of parenting, you know, role reversal. I don't remember a lot, to be honest. I think I sort of blocked out a lot. There is this sort of, there's sort of key moments of trauma, which I remember, but, you know, I don't really remember a lot.
At what age did she die?
She died at 60. But to be honest, I mean, with somebody with a sort of, with somebody with an eating disorder, it's really easy to brush it under the carpet to be like, oh, what, you know, they were thin or they didn't eat. But to be honest, a lifelong eating disorder is sort of watching somebody want to die for a very long time. And they sort of tread a very fine line of not dying and staying alive, but kind of having a sort of death wish at the same time. So, you know, she'd, to me, I'd been sort of mourning for her for at least 10 years before she died.
So was the bulimia and anorexia just always there, always part of her dialogue, always in her life?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of remember it as a kid. I remember sort of like she'd disappear from the table and, you know, some, as I got a bit older, I'd be less tolerant and I'd follow her. And, you know, it didn't, it took a long time, but the, through my teenage years, the sort of the downstairs loo was sort of just near my bedroom. So I could hear her vomiting through my teenage years. So I'd lie upstairs and hear her and be like, well, what do I do about this? You know, do I storm downstairs and be like, what are you doing? So it was always a kind of a slight elephant. Well, like not a slight elephant, but it was always like the skeleton in the closet, to use a terrible euphemism.
And did the bulimia and anorexia finally kill her?
Oh, God. I mean, I don't really know. You know, when I think when you deny your body and mind for so long, yeah, your body just falls apart. I think she'd been, I think, physically falling apart for a long time. She died of heart failure. I think everything just packed in. I'd been estranged from her for a long time. But because I was back in Hertfordshire where she lived, because I was pregnant and we were trying to work out how to buy a house when I was freelance for so long, and it was kind of tricky, and I thought, well, if I'm in proximity to her, and maybe also the pregnancy thing sort of made me need her more,
connect with her.
But you know what I you know, you always have the fantasy that you would find the mother, I'm talking about it in like the third person or whatever. I guess my fantasy would be that I could possibly find a scrap of the mother that I needed at the time, but I didn't. What I found is somebody who was dying. And I was like, well, I need to do something. So I tried to help her with the, you know, I mean, I think it was all too late, but I tried to help her with the NHS, with trying to get any kind of care or support, like, or sort of like, even if it was palliative care. You know, and the worst thing was that she was found dead on her floor. Yeah, it was not a pretty ending.
What age were you then, Grace?
37.
And you were pregnant with your baby boy?
Yeah. So he was born on the 25th of September and she died on the 25th of November.
My goodness.
60 days after. 60 days, weird, right?
So that's quite a lot to take on. I can't imagine all that your mind must and your body must have been going through at that time, when actually you're also dealing with this really traumatic situation right before your eyes.
I mean, I couldn't breastfeed. And, you know, there seems to be no rhyme or reason why you can or can't breastfeed. But I think that potentially I'd been so traumatized by A, leaving my home in London and living within in a cabin in my stepdad's house, and then trying to help my mum, and it all just being so much. I wonder if that's a part of it. You know, who knows? But, you know, you can't, I don't look back on it. I certainly, when she died at 8 weeks old, that was it for me in breastfeeding, because I was like expressing and pumping and stuff like that. And I was just like, I just don't have the will to do this.
So Larkin was 8 weeks old when your mummy passed away.
Through the day, yeah.
Oh, what, from that point forward, that day forward, how did you cope? What were those first few weeks like? How did you get through each day?
If I'm really honest, I was like, I'm really sorry, but I like the stress of not being able to breastfeed and doing pumping through the night and all of that sort of stuff. And I was just like, I'm sorry, I've really got to drink wine. This is the only way I'm going to get through this. We weren't living in our home yet. We'd got the keys to our house 2 days before he was induced. And his umbilical cord was out around his middle. But they didn't know that. So I had an emergency C-section. So I'd had a traumatic birth. He wasn't breastfeeding. I was living in my stepdad's cabin. We bought a house. We couldn't live in it yet. I was just like, yeah, this is perhaps more than I can handle. I can only describe what happened is the first year I was completely numb, and I felt like I was doing a really, really great job, a conscientious job of looking after somebody else's baby. So it's like, I knew I had a baby. He was great. You know, I was on autopilot looking on.
You were going through the motions, yeah, of what you thought you should be doing.
Yeah, doing everything, yeah, that I, you know, at least I was like, I'm going to get up. You know, I've got to get up. I did all of that sort of stuff, but I was on autopilot. I just couldn't feel anything. And after about a year, he was just too cute. You know, he melted my heart. You know, when he could sort of start standing up in the cot and being reactive, when he was, when he was sort of super tiny, you know, you don't get much out of them. But after, when he sort of, it turned about 8 months, I was like, he really broke through the barriers for me of the fog, the sort of brain fog, the emotional fog, and sort of, you know, I didn't do any therapy because I just couldn't. It was just, when do you do therapy when you've got a, you know, a tiny brand new baby?
I want to go back, and I want to go back to the point where you're married and maybe you're starting to discuss the idea, the notion of starting a family. And I just wondered, were you hesitant to embark on this journey due to the relationship you had with your mum?
I'm a very fertile person, so it turns out.
So
there have been points in my life where I've had to choose whether I was ready to be a mother, and I was always aware that I wanted my career to be a thing, I felt like I fought my way out of my childhood by really super succeeding at what I did. I fell into doing TV quite late on in my career. And I was aware that, I don't think TV is a very female-friendly kind of format, especially not, you know, it's not very body-friendly, body-diverse-friendly. It certainly wasn't 10 years ago. And also it's not very, hence why every TV...
It still isn't.
No, yeah, exactly. Let's call it.
Let's call it. It still isn't, yeah.
And every TV presenter that I was kind of working around at the time did the, you know, snapback body kind of article, you know, 6-8 weeks later, whatever, they were on the front of, like, you know, You magazine or Sunday magazine or whatever, but, you know, one of the tabloids being like, look, here I am, you know, body for hire, as if you'd never had a kid before. I found that really quite tough. But I definitely left it late because I knew that being in TV, which is what I'd wanted for a long, long time. You know, I went to theatre-based college. That I knew that I would be kind of you know, shoved off the edge, I think. I think I did expect what was going to happen, which is basically the bottom fell out of my career. It was like the end of my career. Obviously, with my mum dying so quickly after me having a baby, it was kind of sort of Groundhog Day. Not Groundhog Day. It was like, I don't know, it felt like the world collapsed. Maybe for a reason, because when I'd got to sort of the peak of my career, and actually I hated it. I really hated doing TV. I found it really vacuous. I found it really competitive. I found it really narcissistic and quite tricky, actually. And so I guess it was great to have a reset, even though it burnt me to the ground.
Do you do the same activities that your mummy did with you with Larkin? And that's good things and bad things. Do you recognise any behaviours of things that you do, any rituals, good or bad?
My mum did nothing with me. You know, she, at one point she was running two jobs. She was very young. She had me at 23. So she didn't, I remember watching a lot of TV as a kid. A lot of TV when she was, you know, she was probably hungover a lot, wanted to have a lie in, and I sat in front of the TV a lot. Maybe she did other stuff with me that I don't remember, but you know, I'm giving her the sort of benefit of the doubt there. But
so, do you find yourself doing things for Larkin because you missed out? Like, that's another sort of way of looking at it. Do you find that you want to give him so many experiences as a child to sense that magic and wonder that perhaps you didn't have?
I mean, I'm aware of not trying to overcompensate too much. The one thing that her and I have in common is, you know, I think the way that she wanted to love me perhaps is the way that I love Larkin, but I have stability, whereas she didn't. So she was always really engaging and funny, and she always used, you know, funny language. She was always calling us funny names. And I do that with Larkin, but I have the gift that I'm not a single mother yet. And I can pick him up from school, and I can drop him off at school, and we're not late. And because I don't have to get ready, I don't have to put my full face of makeup on to go to a job. Or, she tried really hard. She failed as well, and I've had to come to terms with that. That's okay. But, you know, with Larkin, you know, I always try to make him know that me taking him to school and picking him up is like a beautiful thing. It's not like a standard thing that everybody gets, and the time that we have together is precious. I very badly tried to do all the things that my mum couldn't do. Like, I take him to swimming lessons, and, you know, I take him to football club, and which is like football club and me is just like the complete antithesis of what you would think of me being like a football mom. You know, I feel completely out of place, but, you know, I do it not because my mum didn't, but just because
you understand. But is it also that you understand how important consistency is when you're a parent?
I guess. You know, I don't hammer it home, but, you know, God, having done lockdown and trying to teach him for however many months we did at home, you know, I kind of realize, you know, how tough it is to be a good parent as well. You know, and that sort of takes the sting out of the anger that I might have had for my mom. You know, it's you really have to show up to be a good parent. And sometimes you just can't. You've got other stuff going on.
Some days you just don't want to. And
some days you can't. You're just like, I just don't have it. You know, I'm human. I just don't have it today.
If you were to ask her one question now about how she was as a mum or her choices, if there was one question, you could just say, "Oi, do you know why you did that? Or was I this to you?" Or I just wonder if there is one particular question that runs in your head that you would just love to ask her.
I think there's been a lot of questions over time. which I think I've, at becoming a mother, I've been able to answer for myself. I don't think there is one particular question, but, you know, a kind of, why weren't you there? What was going on? Why didn't you love me? Why couldn't you show up for me? You know, all of those kind of questions. And I feel like now, understanding how hard parenting is, I kind of answer them for myself. It wasn't my fault. And I guess there's a lot of my childhood, which I carry around, which I thought, you know, was it me? You know, she had me very young, you know, was I an inconvenience, and yada, yada.
Do you feel you understand your mum more now that you are a mum yourself?
Oh, 100%. And it's been a long process. You know, I'm seven years in since she died. And it took me to about 5 years. You know, I know the grieving process is a complicated one. And I guess one of the first thoughts when she died was, it must be, what's it like to lose a great mother? You know, somebody who is a massive part of your life, versus losing a mother that is difficult. And I think, you know, I don't think there's an answer to that, because it's not a comparative thing, but I think that, you know, losing an amazing mother leaves a huge, huge gaping hole of like need in your life. Whereas for me, I'd done a load of processing anyway, but it presented different complications. There wasn't a natural process of grief, which you could, you know, there is a grieving process. People talk about it all the time, you know, but it took me to 5 years to go through that with Larkin and kind of understand what being a parent was about and how challenging maybe it was for her with her challenges. I'd always thought, you know, I was always in tune with her in her life. And I understand that she had challenges, but it becoming a mother sort of healed some of that in me, of understanding why maybe she couldn't cope or didn't cope.
Which must have been in some ways quite healing in itself.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely would say that becoming a mother has been a massive healing process. Or just an understanding process, understanding that your parents are also flawed and fallible and they're just human. You know, we think about them as like superheroes or whatever. And it's definitely taught me to be able to say, to not lay, to have that boundary, not laying my emotional baggage on Larkin like my mum did, but to be able to say to him, you know what, I'm not, you're being tough today and I'm not having a great day and you're making me sad. And then he responds to that, to being that your parents are human after all.
Do you have like a set of coping mechanisms or tools that you call upon, like therapy, that assist you with that feeling of guilt and those feelings of sadness?
No, I'm trying. I don't know if it's because I'm resistant or I just not sorted it out. Maybe it is I'm resistant. Where it comes out is, you know, I've lost a lot of confidence in myself as in my job, and kind of like there was something that I read the other day, which is real confidence is somebody that can be quiet in a room and listen, and bravado, which is kind of what I present, I think, a lot, is somebody that needs to be sort of like loud and center of attention, and you know, real confidence is somebody that can listen in a meeting and then like sort of present their idea with confidence. I think I lost a lot of my confidence. I mean, I didn't have a lot of self-esteem in the first place because of the way it all started. But I think that not processing feelings has a very sort of weird way of eating away at stuff. And certainly it's like massive, I've had massive anxiety, which has resulted at the beginning of the year that I've started taking anxiety meds, which has been brilliant, I have to say. You know, whilst I'm trying to work out getting the grief counselling and is it too late, you know, I do a lot of my processing by doing stuff for other people. I work for Stu Ryder, which is about, you know, grief counselling and palliative care. And it's my way of giving back. And the only way that I feel my sort of living therapy is not to go and, you know, sit in a room and talk about my problems. It's to help other people. And maybe that's a deflection or a projection, but it kind of works. I can't deal with any sort of like fake lifestyle bullshit. You know, like I won't put on my Instagram, like, here's me on the beach with my sort of bikini that I'm promoting. It's just like, I just want to talk about the real stuff. I can't have gone through all of that pain in life just to, I saw something about healing today, and it was like, healing doesn't come from like a sort of the light of the angels. Healing, the power to heal people, other people, comes from, you know, out of the darkness, like forging your way out of any kind of like trauma to find enlightenment or light, a light presence of being. And I think that that is the most beautiful lesson that you can pass on. And that's where I'm at now. That's all I want to do.
What one thing do you wish you could tell her today, your mum, about your journey being a mum?
I guess I would say to her, it would definitely be, I forgive you, because there was a lot to forgive, a lot of badness. I would say also, I forgive you, but I would also say, I understand you. I think I always did, but you know, there was so much loss for me not having a mother because she just wasn't mentally there. But there's also a freedom in that, you know, that you can be whoever you want to be. That's hard won in my case, but that's what I'd say to her, I guess. I'd say, you know, I think she tried as hard as she could in whatever the remits of her life were. And I can see that now. I mean, it's taken a lot of work to get there, but you know, that would be my statement, I guess.
What an incredible place to come to.
I hope so. I'm not sure, but you know, each day as it comes.
Grace Woodward. You've been listening to Pod of Mum with me, Kelly Ford. Grace spoke to me online in autumn 2020. If you want to find out more about me, head on over to Instagram at Book of Mum. A big thank you for listening to Pod of Mum, and don't forget to like and subscribe. Wishing you a great week.